Hi, welcome back to the Rosslare podcast. Dylan Walsh will now take us on a historic verbal tour of Johnstown Castle and Gardens.
Johnstown Castle, in the heart of South County Wexford, is somewhere that is very close to my heart. It's somewhere I've always gone ever since I was a child. I'm very fortunate that I've always lived within 10 or 15 minutes of it. Now, it's the place I go to unwind, to connect with my creative side and to absorb the sheer beauty of my surroundings. More about that later. First, I want to give you a little background about the castle and the estate. We'll start with the history of Johnstown Castle. The first building on the site was Rathlanan Castle. It was built soon after the Norman invasion of Ireland in 1169 by the Esmond family, who at the time was headed by Geoffrey de Esmond. There is evidence to suggest that Geoffrey's son, Maurice, built the tower house on the Rathlanan site before his death in 1225. This is the Rathlanan castle that actually still stands to this day. It was Maurice's son, John, who built a similar castle on the nearby Johnstown site. The first Johnstown Castle. Following the sack of Wexford by Oliver Cromwell in 1649, the castle and land were confiscated from the Catholic Esmonds. Cromwell gave it to his representative in Wexford, Lieutenant Colonel Overstreet. After a series of slightly complicated deaths and marriages, the estate came into the ownership of John Grogan in 1691. One of Grogan's most notable descendants was Cornelius Grogan. Cornelius actually took part in the 1798 rebellion in Wexford, along with other notable members of the Protestant gentry, such as Bagnall Harvey, Patrick Prendergast, and Wolfe Tone. For this, Cornelius was hung, drawn, and quartered by the British forces on Wexford Bridge on the 28th of June, 1798. To any of you who may be unfamiliar with the 1798 rebellion, it was the first attempt by the people of Ireland to re-establish the Irish state. It was the spark that lit the fire, which eventually led to the foundation of the Irish Free State in 1922. To commemorate Cornelius, the family actually added pike heads, which was the rebels' weapon of choice, to the tops of the bars of the main gate. Anyway, back to Johnstown. The last family to live in Johnstown Castle were the Fitzgeralds. Lord Maurice Fitzgerald and Lady Adelaide Forbes married in 1880, and they made Johnstown their home. Lord Maurice died suddenly, aged 48, in 1901. Their only son and heir, Gerald, was killed in action in northern France during World War I in 1914. They did have three daughters, though, Kathleen, Geraldine, and Marjorie. Kathleen had two sons. The eldest, Gerald Michael Lacken, was killed during World War II in northern Africa. His brother, Maurice Victor, was wounded but actually survived the war. Following the death of Lady Fitzgerald in 1942, the Johnstown Castle estate passed to Major Michael Lacken, who was Kathleen's husband, and his surviving son, Maurice Victor. In lieu of death duties, the castle and estate were gifted to the Irish state in 1945. Most immediate members of the Fitzgerald and Lacken families are actually interred in a quiet part of the estate, which is near the Upper Lake. Once signed over to the Irish state, the castle and grounds became the Johnstown Castle Agricultural College. This was very much a signal of what was to come. The running of the college and estate fell to the agricultural body on Forus Toluntis, now called Chagask. All parties involved in the handover were in agreement that the ornamental nature of the garden and pleasure grounds on the estate would not be altered, something that is still as true today when they are being brought back to their full splendour. On Forus Toluntis ran not only the college here, but they also conducted important research in the field of soil science. At its head was one of the most eminent soil scientists Ireland has ever seen, Dr. Tom Walsh, who was actually my granduncle. Dr. Tom, known affectionately as the Doc, grew up in the nearby village of Piercestown. Through the love and dedication of his older brothers, Paddy and Jim, he studied in UCD, where he earned his doctorate. He brought not only his passion for his field of study, but for the area itself, to Johnstown. In 1974, he was instrumental in the founding of the Irish Agricultural Museum. It began to welcome visitors in 1979 after it was officially opened by the then Irish president, Patrick Hillary. The museum was, and still is, in the old stables and has numerous exhibits on farm machinery, life on the farm, and the infamous potato famine of the 1840s. In the 1980s, the soil research facility moved from the castle itself to a purpose-built lab on the grounds. Here, it was given a new name, the Walsh Laboratory. It was formally dedicated to the Doc on the 27th of May 1987. Recently, he was honoured by the addition of a plaque honouring him on the wall of Pierceystown National School, where he attended as a child. Well, that's enough history to be getting on with for the moment. Now let's have a little look at the inside of Johnstown Castle. More recently, massive restoration work has been done on the main castle and on the grounds. This work is ongoing, but what they've achieved so far is absolutely wonderful. So let's take a little look at it. We'll start downstairs. I'm lucky enough to have had the opportunity to see the inside of the main castle. I can honestly say that the renovations and restorations that have been done to date are amazing. The Johnstown team are slowly working their way through the main rooms of the building. Various sections of three different floors have been completed so far, as well as essential structural works. One of the most extensive restorations took place on the servants' tunnel. This 86-metre-long underground tunnel was used to bring servants and supplies into the castle without bringing them through the family area. It leads to a separate building that also once contained the cold meat store. As well as that, the kitchen and servants' hall have been fully restored, with the staircase used to access this lower level. The finishing touches are actually quite exquisite and exceptionally detailed. They include wonderful unique storage tins such as Halpin's Gold Amber Tea and one for Jacob's Biscuits, to name just two. The renovated servants' hall has a wonderful box on the wall with a bell and indicators which would have been used to signal to the servants when they were called to an appropriate room upstairs. Onto the ground floor now. The two main rooms looking out towards the Middle Lake have been restored. These, along with the spectacular entrance hallway, complete with chandelier, and the reception hall have all been brought back to their former glory. The reception hall is known as the Apostles' Hall thanks to the carved wooden figures integrated into the panelling. The two largest rooms on the ground floor are the dining room and the library. The dining room has a large central table laid, as if for formal dinner, complete with all different types of cutlery in the right places. I can only imagine what it would have been like to sit and enjoy a dinner here back in the day. The room next to the dining room is the library, and this is where the family and their guests would have retired after dinner. From the dining room, it's actually accessed through a secret door. I loved this. When it was closed, you genuinely wouldn't notice the difference between it and the bookcases along the wall. Well, almost. The only indication is the modern fire escape sign hanging above it from the ceiling. The library itself is like a haven of peace and tranquility. It's somewhere to sit and read without disturbance. The desk, beautifully positioned in the bay window, overlooks the Middle Lake in all its glory. Just off the library is a beautiful little circular room that, once upon a time, was a writing room. Above the dining room and library are two similarly large and beautiful rooms. Once, they may have been two drawing rooms, but now they've been restored as a beautiful drawing room and a bedroom. The drawing room has some spectacular furniture in it and has some delightful sections, including one around the exquisite fireplace and another overlooking the grounds. The restored bedroom has some beautiful anterooms off it that have been restored to resemble dressing rooms for the lord and lady of the house. These little rooms contain some beautiful finishing touches and genuinely have the effect of transporting you back a couple of hundred years. Across the first floor gallery from the drawing room is something you probably wouldn't expect to see in a castle of this nature. This room became a lab after the castle was handed over to the state, and it's a wonderful nod to this period of the castle's diverse history. Obviously, this room holds personal significance for me, but Nonetheless, it provides a fascinating look back at the scientific work that took place here. Interestingly enough, in the early to mid 1800s, the East Wing, also housing the ballroom, was home to a scientific laboratory for Hamilton Knox, Grogan Morgan. There are large sections of the castle, including the former ballroom or games and billiard rooms, to the east of the main castle that are still awaiting restoration. The walkway joining these two sections of the castle was glazed in the 1800s and the two buildings became one. Most notably, the large room that once housed the beautiful grand staircase is actually still empty. The staircase had to be removed in the late 1940s because it was full of dry rot. Personally, I'd actually love to see some form of reconstruction of the original Return into the Future. As you can probably gather, Johnstone Castle itself is not the only building on the estate. Rathlannan Castle, as I've already mentioned, has survived in place on the estate since it was built in the Middle Ages. Now, surrounded by trees and stunning gardens, I actually think it's a lovely recognition of the estate's origins, and it has remained virtually unchanged since it was built. The two castle-like buildings and the statue walk between Rathlannan Castle and Johnstone Castle are follies. These were built purely to improve the scenic view from Johnstone Castle in the 1800s. The Fisherman's Tower is the more ornate of the two, and it can seem to emerge directly from the lake. I think both of these towers, as well as the raised walkways and other constructions along this site, are utterly magnificent. They have a beauty only equaled by the view of the main castle from them. No wonder half of Wexford comes here for their wedding photographs. The estate also plays host to a multitude of buildings, including the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, and the Walsh Laboratory. The other, smaller buildings, which would be similar in style to the main castle, served as anything from the meat store to houses for the staff and their families to gate lodges. You can actually see most of them while you wander around the grounds. But, alas, at this stage, you can only go inside the two follies which are on the edge of the middle lake. So it's enough about buildings for the minute. We'll move on to the gardens and the grounds. So, the gardens and grounds have been open to the public since 1969, and they boast the three main lakes and a few other slightly more hidden delights too. So let's take a little stroll through them. We'll start with the lower lake. Until relatively recently, the lower lake was really only visible through the trees. Now there's a walkway the whole way around it, not to mention a large playground. The walk is a perfect place to enjoy the towering trees in all seasons. As it is the most recent one to be done up, there isn't the same ornate decoration that the middle lake boasts. But, however, it does have a gorgeous new bridge with beautiful red railings and a wonderful arched walkway on it. The middle lake is definitely the showcase piece for Johnstone. Not only does it have the two follies I've already spoken about, but it also plays host to the statue walk. The statue walk is home, oddly enough, two statues. These are of various classical deities. This is also the most scenic area of the grounds and plays host to many an amateur photographer, myself included, taking very different photographs. There is also a stream running into the lake from the upper lake, and it adds that relaxing, trickling water sound to the amazing surroundings. The middle lake, and around the main castle, is also where you find the majority of the estate's peacocks. These beautiful creatures also hang out in the courtyard of the Agricultural Museum and around the newly built visitor centre. The upper lake is the smallest of the three and only has a walkway on one side. It does have a small little island within it and a large area of reeds. These areas are often used by some of the estate's ducks and swans for their nests. Just off the lake is the final resting place for many of the families that called the castle home, as well as the estate's apiary. The estate also boasts a walled garden with many and varied colourful plants and flowers that bloom at different points throughout the year. Mixed with a few different types of trees, it makes for a wonderful place to pass the time. Currently, the upper garden and orchard are not open to the public. Neither is the glass house down one side of the walled garden. This glasshouse would have been used to grow food for the castle and later would have been used for research purposes. I understand there are plans to bring it back to its former glory. The gate that you use to access the walled garden is guarded by the head of a gargoyle. Because of this, this gate has actually become known as the Devil's Gate. As well as the continued restoration of the interior of the castle, there is extensive and utterly fantastic work taking place on the gardens. There is ongoing landscaping taking place on both the walled garden and the sunken garden. Both are set to look phenomenal, the best they have for many years. Soil research is still taking place in the Walsh Laboratory. And following repeated COVID lockdowns and travel restrictions, the people of County Wexford have a whole new appreciation for Johnstown Castle. Personally, I visited Johnstown for as long as I can remember, and every time I go, I grow to love it more and more. I hope someday to bring my children and grandchildren to visit the place I love so much. It is truly my happy place. Thank you all very much for listening. My name is Dylan Walsh, and I have absolutely loved telling you all about Johnstown Castle.
Keep on listening to TRP. For those of you unfamiliar with Wexford, let me assure you, Johnstown Castle is a wonderful family day out.